Good morning, everyone. This is Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 45, and we have been working with the three forms of death. One instituted under Aries, another under Scorpio, and another under Pisces, all of which, all signs of which, have a strong Pluto connection. Even Aries does. Some astrologers have considered Pluto to be a kind of ruler of Aries, not the Tibetan. And there is a connection between Aries, Pluto, and Shambhala. Pluto is a very Shambhalic planet, and Aries, a sign of fire, a strongly Shambhalic sign, one of the major first-ray signs. We reached the point where we were considering what the old commentary had to say about these three forms of death. And here are the statements from the old commentary. The fire blazed forth, and through that fire I died to life, and so was born to death, and then again I died to form. This particular section shows a dual phase of the Aries process, separated by millions of years. So there was the fire of form, which attracted the spirit, and the monad, or the projection of the monad, died to its sense of livingness, its sense of beingness, and the consciousness of those high levels, and was born into the consciousness of the lower three worlds, which, compared with the higher consciousness, is death itself. And then later, there is a death to form, the burning up of form. The jungle of experience, the jungle of illusion, dissolves in flames, form no longer holds, and there is death to form and a rebirth into life. Here is another of these comments from the old commentary. The heat of earth, the fiery temper of the mother, destroyed the form, release the soul, and so the lesser self was killed. Now here we just have a one-way process. We have the rejection or ejection of the growing consciousness by form. The lower worlds are no longer suitable. The projection of the soul is returned to soul consciousness. The lesser self, the personality self, is killed as far as the consciousness is concerned, and the individual becomes the manipulator and server in those worlds, manipulator of and server in those worlds. So the consciousness of the lesser self is killed in Scorpio, and soul consciousness is achieved. Here's another relating to Pisces. The waters drowned the man. The fish was made to disappear. It then appeared again, only to die, or else to die and bring salvation. So this is a two-way process. Of course, it could be considered a one-way process as well. The consciousness is constantly engulfed by the lower worlds, and it appears again in the reincarnation process. But it either dies to itself or for itself and reappears reincarnationally, or it purposefully dies to bring salvation to others. And this is a chosen renunciation under Pluto and Neptune in Pisces. From another point of view, when we have the mantram the evolutionary mantra in Pisces, go forth into matter, we have the true man being drowned by the waters of matter, and his consciousness is obscured. And so perhaps the fish, who is a representative of soul life, is made to disappear in that engulfment. We can look at it in two ways, either as a dual process or as a single process. Okay. Thus, continues the Tibetan, there are symbolically the death through fire, the death through earth. Interesting, though, Scorpio is representing the death through earth, even though it is a water sign. But on the physical plane, one must prove oneself in Scorpio. So the earth is considered the three lower worlds, I think, and the death through water. Burning, suffocation, and drowning. And all of them can be considered means of release as well. The fires by friction overcomes the higher fires at first. The soul is suffocated at first in the three lower worlds. The soul consciousness is engulfed at first in the three lower worlds. That's fire, earth, and water. But later the burning is a release. The suffocation is the opportunity for the more subtle soul to rise above those stifling lower circumstances, and drowning as well is a way in which the soul can be released and not simply overcome. The lower consciousness is drowned and the higher consciousness is released. But in this world cycle, the Tibetan continues, the death through air is not either known or understood. What can it be? Can it be a death through dispersion, in a way? The consciousness is decentralized, in a way. We have to move from decentralization to centralization, and again to decentralization. Can it be that the power to concentrate and to know oneself as the soul self is initially initially made impossible? The power to know oneself is a Leo trait, and Aquarius can represent the dispersion of that centralized self-consciousness. Anyway, the wind blows and tends to scatter, so there's a kind of a death through scattering or dispersion. But we cannot pretend to know exactly what the Tibetan means, because he tells us that we don't really understand in this world cycle what is death by air. We have to ask then again, what is a world cycle? Is it a round, a planetary, a chain round of some over 300 million years? Or is it a shorter cycle or a longer? There are not, therefore, four deaths. As the goal of our system during manifestation is initiation or release into the air. This is a very interesting way of considering initiation. It is a type of freedom. Release and liberation are coming through the planet, a number of planets, but through Uranus, as we have been discussing. And Uranus ruling at first an air sign. Okay, ruling. So there are not, therefore, four deaths as the goal of our system during manifestation. Is initiation or release into the air. So air represents an objective rather than an obstacle. And all of the other types of death, the death by fire, by earth, by water, all of which represent the elemental life of the dense physical body of the planetary logos and even the solar logos, all of those release the soul into the air of the Buddhic plane, where liberation is found and the fourth initiation is taken. So that the bird of life, out of time and space, can fly free. Well, there, that's a beautiful statement. I think I should read it without interrupting myself with my own commentary. There are not, therefore, four deaths, as the goal of our system during manifestation is initiation, or release, into the air, so that the bird of life, out of time and space, can fly free. Well, the bird of life can be the returning jiva itself with its type of consciousness we call soul consciousness, and the place or the dimension in which the first phases of time and space, or time and space initially, is overcome, or the first phases of the process of overcoming time and space is achieved, is the Buddhic plane, the plane of air, into which the consciousness is released at the fourth initiation, and the personality at that point is and the soul, the egoic vehicle as well, are either burned or drowned or suffocated, thus released into the air of the Buddhic plane. So the Buddhic plane represents release. Air is Buddhi at first. The concept which the law of correspondence brings of the final death, is there such a thing, but perhaps for humanity there is covered by the words liberation, relinquishment, and final initiation, and mean little to humanity, though they should mean more to disciples increasingly, for it concerns the planetary logos and his life cycle. Now, remember about the fixed cross and where it leads. Blinding light, fiery pain, bitter woe, and yet the cross of liberation. The fourth initiation is also called the Great Renunciation, where the three lower worlds are relinquished, and final initiation, well, as far as humanity is concerned, or at least in terms of the process of ending the need to reincarnate, that's the fourth, but there's also there are also higher initiations, which we can call final, and in terms of the cosmic physical plane, the ninth initiation would be called final. So all of this means little to humanity, for it concerns the planetary logos and his life cycle. Well, let's just say we have a more conscious identification with the planetary logos at the sixth initiation, at which time a man re-becomes fully the monad. So when you see that word final, you have to judge of the context in which it appears. But here, when we're talking about humanity, there's no need anymore to be a reincarnating human being after the fourth degree, although that particular fate may be chosen in terms of service. I wonder whether fourth degree initiates are born, or whether somehow they can begin to participate with another chela who has taken the second degree and can offer up the body for use. On a higher turn of the spiral, the Christ, a sixth degree initiate, or virtually so, at the time he took over the Master Jesus's body, was working with a potentially fourth degree initiate. In other words, a great master, the head of the hierarchy, the Lord Maitreya, at that time a fifth degree initiate, becoming a sixth degree initiate, worked with and utilized the body of a high initiate master, Jesus. He wasn't a master yet. He was a third degree initiate becoming a fourth degree initiate. So the numbers 6 and 4 go together, and 4 and 2. Let's see what else the Tibetan says here. The death by drowning or by water in Pisces releases man again into that great center which we call humanity, and their experience is gained. In other words, the fish appears and disappears over and over again. When the fish disappears, it in a way returns to the causal body, the ray of the soul, or its consciousness. The ray of consciousness from the soul is withdrawn, abstracted, and later the incarnating later that ray is reprojected and the fish reappears in the ocean. We recall that the first individual incarnation is stated to be occurring in Pisces. So Cancer for the first incarnation in the mass sense, and Pisces in the individual sense. So indeed, go forth into matter, into drowning matter, matter that will drown you, or water that will drown you. This is what the soul must do, and that is the evolutionary mantra of Pisces. The first mantra, go forth into matter, or go forth into water, is another way of thinking of it. Go forth as a fish into water. And there human experience is gained on the cross of many changes, the mutable cross, which rules that first incarnation, as well as many, many incarnations for millions of years. Herein lies the mystery of the fish goddesses of this sign, who spawn their young again and again. Well, in a way, the fish goddesses, that connects us with the mother aspect, the word goddess does, and the spawning of the young, that the young are the fishes that come from the soul. The fish goddesses are, in a way, related to the soul. But it is a mystery, and not fully, perhaps, solvable at this time. The many fish are the many incarnations swimming in the ocean of experience, of illusion, of matter, of water, appearing and disappearing under a natural process until they voluntarily, willfully, and in renunciation disappear or sacrifice themselves for the sake of the other fishes. All right. The death by suffocation in Scorpio releases man into the planetary center we call hierarchy. The tests are overcome at the first three initiations. Even a first-degree initiate or a second is a peripheral member of hierarchy, but in terms of entering the ashram, truly, three initiations should be taken. They are supervised or regulated or induced by the processes of Scorpio, the first three initiations. And then a man becomes a fuller member of the ashram, no longer strictly, perhaps, a probationary member. And then the death by fire or burning in Aries releases man into another center, to which we give the name Shambhala. Well, if this were to occur, we really must be speaking of the sixth initiation. In most cases, there are some masters on the fifth degree, and they're on the first ray, and they are released into Shambhala. But for those on other rays, it seems to be inferred that the sixth initiation is required before there is membership in Shambhala. In a way, the fully conscious monad is a member of Shambhala, but in terms of its projection, also to enter those halls of those dimensions, the sixth degree is usually necessary. So these are one-way processes. DK is not talking here about how Pisces, Scorpio, and Aries are a two-way process. Earlier, he seems to have done so. In other words, by a two-way process, I mean that which brings a man, initiates him and holds him, initiates him into and holds him in the three lower worlds, and which finally brings release from those worlds. Pisces tends to release a man onto the fixed cross at the later stages of the common cross, the later stages of the path of probation. Scorpio taking a man as far as the third initiation in his usual mode of functioning begins the process whereby a man climbs down from the fixed cross and eventually mounts the cardinal cross. And Aries, I would say, will introduce a man onto the cardinal cross. And yet the fire by friction aspects of Aries overcome a man in the lower worlds. Let's see. Okay. Right. Okay, so I think we see this idea between the single process, and in this case, Pisces into humanity, which is no great feat concerning the liberation process. It is an engulfment process, but later Pisces, of course, is very much involved in that final incarnation, which also brings a man into Shambhala through complete renunciation. The final incarnation can be taken in Pisces, which is relating a man to Shambhala. And Scorpio is the great illusion of the lower three worlds, and it can suffocate a man at first, and the higher consciousness is suffocated thereby. But later, that suffocation works as a method of release into hierarchy. One can no longer stand to breathe the air of the lower worlds, and seeks to join the ashrams on the Buddhic plane where a purer air can be breathed. And the fire by friction processes overcome a man in Aries. The higher fires die, the lower fire rages, but later, through the burning, there is a higher release. So it's a two-way process, even though at times DK is just speaking of a one-way process. Earlier he spoke of a two-way process in most cases. Okay, there is much to work out. Indeed there is. Indeed there is much to work out, is there not, in these ideas, which I offer to you as suggestive considerations and as hints related to the science of triangles. Well, we do have a triangle here, and we do have a triangle involving three crosses, and one of the ways that the Tibetan has described this introduces us to the idea of the triangle of humanity, hierarchy, and Shambhala, and the three signs which are initiatory with respect to those centers. So, three signs on three different crosses initiate man into three planetary centers, namely humanity, hierarchy, and Shambhala. So yes, there are many relationships to work out, and from the point of view, practical point of view of a disciple at this time, when Scorpio is quite strong in the chart, there is the question of how the individual can come closer to fuller membership in the hierarchy. I would not suggest, however, that we begin to think of how we can gain fuller membership in Shambhala. We as a group can begin to respond to the planetary will which emanates from Shambhala. That much we can do, but we are not about to be released into Shambhala by treading the final burning ground in Aries. Okay, so there are hints here related to the science of triangles, which is taken up later in the book, around page 400, 404, somewhere there, The Science of Triangles, which is the esoteric basis of astrology. You see how much it is a third-rate science, because the triangle is that figure which suggests the third ray. The triangle underlies all of hierarchical astrology, and we're just beginning to lift the veils slightly when we think of those triangles. But, you know, even in the ordinary astrological chart, when we begin to consider it esoterically, we do have the triangle of what has been called the triple sun, namely the sun sign itself for the personality, the rising sign for the soul, and the point opposite the sun sign, which we can call the monadic point for the spirit nature in a particular incarnation. Just as the doctrine of the Trinity, he says, microcosmic and macrocosmic, is the esoteric basis of occultism. So the science of triangles is the esoteric basis of astrology, and the doctrine of the Trinity, and not necessarily the Christian version of that doctrine, though not excluding it either, is the esoteric basis of occultism. We recognize this Trinitarian configuration, whereby the three are really one in many different world traditions, and DK is constantly using the triangle. We have what's called a major triangle that he introduces us to in the beginning of Esoteric Psychology, Volume 1, Life, Quality, and Appearance. Life, Quality, and Appearance. A very clear formulation which will help the Western mind adapt its thinking to the realities of occultism. Death is therefore of three kinds. This science of divine dying. That's interesting. This science of divine dying underlies the well-known phrase, the Lamb, that's Aries, slain from the foundation of the world. It has to do, I suppose, with the immersion of the greater soul into the material plane. The world was created in the beginning, or become, and the higher consciousness descended into it to promote its development, and then re-emerged. So there is the sense of the sacrifice of the great soul for the sake or the redemption of matter, or the lesser lives. And when the relationship between Aries, Scorpio, and Pisces is properly understood as the linking and merging of the three crosses, a new light will be thrown upon all subsidiary sciences, exoteric and esoteric. This is a great prophecy, and if it really includes all of the esoteric and esoteric sciences, then this relationship between these three and the three crosses is immensely important. I think we're in no position yet, with the development of human thought being where it is, to understand the full implications of this statement. But we certainly can relate the three crosses and realize that even microcosmically we have and will have experience on all these three crosses. We certainly have had experience on the mutable cross, and we have all drowned and become the reappearing fish, spawned again and again by the fish goddesses. There's some kind of Virgo Pisces Pleiadian relationship there in the idea of the fish goddesses. We have begun to emerge from the drowning in matter and from the suffocation in matter, and we are ejected by this heat of the mother, which propels us towards the hierarchy, because we no longer will to live in this stifling, illusory heat of fire by friction. That brings in the Aries idea. And we are being born gradually through the initiatory process into Aries. And we're not yet on the cardinal cross, but many of us right now should be rapidly approaching or in many cases, even most cases of serious students of these books, treading the fixed cross, which means that probably we've gone through some scorpionic experiences and have died to various phases of illusion in the three lower worlds. Anyone who's taken the first, second, or third initiation has undergone a kind of scorpionic death experience. You know, whether or not you have taken those initiations specifically in the sign Scorpio. The teaching in the secret doctrine about the reincarnating monads, who are called divine sacrifices, lords of knowledge, will, and sacrifice, will be clarified. Interesting names for the monads. These monads who are ourselves are lords of persevering, ceaseless devotion. Devotion even unto death. Okay, so this is the science of divine dying, and the monad practices the science of divine dying because its descent into the lower five worlds, not even the lower three, is an act of willful renunciation of the high consciousness and being of those high monadic levels. And we have to remember again that the monad is on the sixth plane, counting from below upward, and the sixth plane is a great plane of devotion. And throughout that monadic pilgrimage, there is a ceaseless devotion and a ceaseless intent. It does not relent until the pilgrimage is completed, and then who knows what type of pilgrimage lies before the liberated monad, the one who has experienced the five lower worlds and brought redemption on its wings or in its wings. One of the great paths out of the solar system will be chosen. Seven or nine paths, one of which is quite sacrificial, the path of Earth service, but it does lead onto the path of the solar logoi, we are told. So that's quite a compensation. The monad will pursue its way and then be perhaps devoted to another type of mission. But I guess what I'm trying to say is that this quality of devotion, which can be found deep within us, is monadic in its nature. It is inherent. And, you know, we sometimes talk about being rid of devotion and being rid of the lower astral implications of devotion, which can obscure the mind and so forth. But deeply and inherently within us, the factor of devotion is resident, and we are all divine sacrifices. We are all lords of knowledge, will, and sacrifice. We have all descended, and our motivation has been redemption, devotion to a redemption process, which the planetary logos, of which we are a part, is undertaking. All right, we've been talking about death. And deliberate death, the science of divine dying, not the kind of death to form that so many of us may fear and seek as personalities to avoid, but eventually a dying to limitation, which these three signs eventually promote. It is interesting here to note that through the ruling planet Mars, the average man born in this sign, Aries, But you know, sometimes with these digressions, we forget what we're talking about here. But we are speaking of Aries. The average man born in this sign is related to Scorpio. And thus the cardinal cross on which Aries is found is related to the fixed cross on which Scorpio is found. The crosses represent great areas of experience. Crosses represent great spheres of experience. And DK is telling us how they may be related by various processes, signs, and planets. Points of crisis can be noted when the horoscope is considered from this angle. One point of crisis would be certainly changing a cross. And some people are involved in that very much today. There are quite a number of people involved changing from involvement with an emphasis upon the mutable cross towards or into the fixed cross experience of the growing soul, the conscious development of a soul or soul consciousness. At the same time, Aries is related to birth through Mercury, its esoteric ruler, through Mercury, who rules Aries esoterically, and also Virgo, of which Mercury is the exoteric ruler. So he's giving us a relationship here between Aries and Virgo via Mercury. And of course, this can be extended to Scorpio, because the hierarchical ruler of Scorpio is Mercury, and also to Gemini, because the exoteric ruler of Gemini is Mercury. So we can relate signs through the through certain planets which rule them on different levels. Astrology is part of the great science of relations. I don't know which is preeminent, but let's just say the science of relations and astrology are being brought together here. And one of the ways of pursuing esoteric astrology is by determining the many relations between the astrological factors and what these relations signify. So we're looking at relations between Aries and other signs, to Scorpio via Mars, to Virgo via Mercury, and later in the book it will also show to Scorpio and to Gemini via Mercury, and through Uranus also. Aries is related to Aquarius, the sign of world service, leading to death and liberation in Pisces. Well, that word liberation is Uranian, it's also Aquarian, but it has much to do with the final effect of a final incarnation in Pisces. There is the will to freedom in both Aries and Aquarius, and possibly, let's say most probably, Uranus plays a big part in that. Aquarius is the sign of the New Age, and it is the constellation or sign Aries, which is inaugurating or pushing towards or pushing into or initiating the new age. So these two signs, Aries and Aquarius, are closely related through constellational qualities and also through rulership by Uranus. Uranus is the hierarchical ruler of Aries, applying to the initiate status, and Uranus is the orthodox ruler of Aquarius. So these two are thus related, and then we will have a sequence of Aquarius, Pisces, and Aries. Pisces is a kind of final liberation, but Aries, in a sense, when it does not turn again towards incarnation, is even a greater liberation, an initiation into an entirely new dimension. Pisces is the ending of association with a former dimension, a dimension from which liberation is being achieved, and Aries is the entrance into that new dimension. So these are three signs together of liberation. A lot of suffering is undergone in Pisces to make liberation from the previous sphere possible. And then in Aries there is the exaltation of the sun, which can be considered the rising of the monad into a new, entirely new sphere of experience. So what does it say here about Uranus? Uranus is the planet through which zodiacal energy flows in connection with the creative hierarchies upon our planet. We've been studying the creative hierarchies, and we've been seeing how they are groups of monads at different stages of immersion, and thus working through different combinations of forms, each of which, group having an association with a particular sign of the zodiac. But Uranus is a planet which seems to convey something of the nature of all of the hierarchies. With Uranus, the highest and the lowest meet. The highest is the monad and the lowest is the form. So Uranus, let us say, Uranus is connected with bringing monads into expression via forms. The highest and the lowest meet, that's a seventh ray mantram, the soul ray of Uranus being most probably the seventh ray. Certainly the seventh ray is potent. I'd say almost for certain the soul ray of Uranus is the seventh ray. Uranus is the planet through which zodiacal energy flows in connection with the creative hierarchies upon our planet from one of the stars of the Great Bear. Well, which is that star? I mean, Uranus can be associated with the first star or the seventh star. With Al-Kaid, or Benet Nash is another name. Al-Kaid is the first ray star. Having a little trouble here. Yeah, Al-Kaid, A-L-K-A-I-D, the first ray star. Because the monadic ray of Uranus is the first ray. Or Phegda, the seventh ray star, found in the bowl of the Dipper. But we are not certain yet which it will be, but we do know that the creative hierarchies are all about monads in form, and they are all about the stages of evolution through which the monads can pass. They are not about the liberated monads per se. They always associate the monad with form, and thus the highest and the lowest do meet. Anyway, those are some important hints there, but they are not obviously capable, at least I'm not capable, of fully expanding them. It is these relationships with which esoteric astrology deals. You know, we're certainly not just talking about the personality and its fate, are we? There's something much more here. It is these relationships with which esoteric astrology deals, and from them the universal can be grasped and the particular understood. And that's another function of esoteric astrology. Relating the universal and the particular. The human being in his eventual recognized group relations is of more importance than appears in his individual life. So it is what we mean in terms of our group relations, what kind of groups we belong to, what are the functions of those groups, our identification with those groups. These are the things of greater importance, and esoteric astrology is certainly dealing with these larger configurations of which we are a part. The human being in his eventual recognized group relationships is of more importance than appears in his individual life, which the orthodox horoscope seeks to elucidate. So many of us think about our personality primarily and its particular fate, and we do not detach our consciousness from our circumstantial life in order to discover what it is we are more deeply in a group sense. There are many groups of which we are members, many interior groups on various planes, and until ultimately we are member of the seven great groups of monads on the monadic plane, and even three great groups perhaps on the logoic plane. This orthodox horoscope only determines his little destiny and unimportant fate. Well, the personality doesn't think in these terms, but the Tibetan, who is a master and who has seen what human development really is, does speak of the unimportant fate of the little personality and its destiny. Esoteric astrology indicates his group usefulness and the scope of his potential consciousness. Now, that's because it is, in straightforward terms, the astrology of the soul. And the soul is always group conscious, we have been told. So when we are in soul consciousness, it is not our strictly individual concerns which preoccupy us, but our participation in the group, our larger destiny, our larger function and fate. We always, through the heart center and the heart and the head center, through soul consciousness, have our group in mind. This is the beginning of ashramic consciousness. Okay, let's move on. I would remind you here that frequently, when the ruler of the sign is given, he says frequently, maybe not always, okay? Frequently, when the ruler of a sign is given as the sun or moon, I shall speak, or be speaking, of one of the hidden planets, Uranus or Vulcan. Now, okay, that's an interesting sentence, because Vulcan certainly is hidden. But the question is Uranus hidden? And another way to read this sentence is that there are other hidden planets, and there is Uranus, and there is Vulcan, which perhaps the Tibetan no longer considers to be hidden. So suffice it to say, the sun and moon are veiling certain planets, and there are certainly more hidden planets in our solar system than Vulcan. So he may be speaking of some of these on occasion, but usually it is Neptune, Uranus, or Vulcan which are to be considered as being veiled by the sun or the moon. Certainly the moon is of such a negligible status, except for its negative effect, that it cannot be considered the source of positive developmental energies. So the moon almost always has to be thought of in terms of the planet that it veils, especially in esoteric astrology. As for the sun, it is a great star, and until we are an initiate of the third degree, taking our first solar initiation, the degree to which we are spiritually in touch with the sun can be questioned. But increasingly, as the initiations pass, the solar influence also increases, even after the solar angel returns to is source. So we are in the process of being solarized, and by the time we reach the seventh initiation, through which the Christ is now passing, it's a very solar initiation indeed. It's a love-wisdom dual initiation that involves Gemini and a strong relationship to our solar logos. It is presided over by the planetary logos himself, perhaps in his fuller nature, his nature even beyond that of his projection as Sanat Kumara. One of the hidden planets, I shall speak of one of the hidden planets, Uranus or Vulcan. And because the planet Uranus is no longer hidden and is now astronomically registered, it gives us the hint that the hidden planets are more than just Vulcan. These are interchangeable in their use. Okay, and it is difficult to tell to which the esoteric planet refers until you have been told. And this is one of those sentences, you know. Are Uranus and Vulcan interchangeable? Well, let's just say that when you have the moon or the sun, either Uranus or Vulcan, and also Neptune, can all be veiled. And when you see the sun or the moon in a chart, you don't know which of these three or other hidden planets, eventually, I suppose, to be revealed, are meant. So unless we really know the evolutionary status of the individual, the type of energies that he or she seems to be cultivating at the moment, the polarization of the consciousness within the personality or beyond the personality, it is difficult to know which one of the veiled planets to be used, which should be used. So these planets are interchangeable in their use, and it's difficult to tell to which the esoteric planet refers, I mean, whether to the sun or the moon, unless we have been told. At this stage, perhaps, told. What we're suggesting here is that a higher consciousness such as that of a master may be required to give us a definitive perspective upon a particular horoscope. Hence my above reference to Uranus. Well, there's much that is veiled here. I'd like to be able to take the time to really ponder on this. It is a very high function that DK has referred to in relation to Uranus, conveying the energies of the creative hierarchies. So perhaps he means that they are considered to be related to the sun. I would say the sun. Now, you know, when you look at the first manifested creative hierarchy, which is the hierarchy called the Divine Lives, you sometimes wonder with Leo whether, with the Leo rulership, whether Uranus rules that hierarchy or Vulcan. What does the sun in Leo veil with that hierarchy? And I think he is suggesting here that from the logoic plane, from that first hierarchy, which is, in a way, in terms of the manifested hierarchies, it's the father hierarchy, Uranus, the primeval father, can be considered important in connection with that hierarchy, and important in the generation of all the hierarchies below. I'm speaking of the manifested creative hierarchies on the cosmic physical plane. Uranus is an older father even than Saturn. Uranus is the father of Saturn. Uranus, in a way, rules the entire cosmic etheric planes or subplanes. So the creative hierarchy is certainly in relation to the cosmic physical plane, which includes the cosmic ethers, has a lot to do with Uranus. Let's review that statement. Uranus is the planet through which zodiacal energy flows in connection with the creative hierarchies upon our planet. Now, we can question whether the liberated hierarchies, which are focused on the cosmic astral plane, are involved with the planet Uranus, because perhaps the cosmic astral plane, which is beyond, in a way, the solar system, does not concern energies flowing upon our planet. So, you know, the interesting thing is that with respect to the solar logos, his solar system is said to occur only on the cosmic physical plane, which means that, in a way, his cosmic astral vehicle and his cosmic mental vehicle are beyond the solar system. So if we're talking about our planet and Uranus and zodiacal energies, perhaps we're not speaking of the hierarchies on the cosmic astral plane, but only those on the cosmic physical plane. And Uranus is certainly the ruler, in a way, of the logoic plane with its first ray monad, and Vulcan is as well. And so, in a way, they are interchangeable. Vulcan has a first-ray soul, but Uranus has a first-ray monad, and that would connect both of them to the logoic plane. All right, these are abstruse matters, are they not? Abstruse to all of us, and all we can do is intelligently, if we can, intelligently speculate upon meaning here, and try to enter into the mystery. So, again, we are concluding with this paragraph. I would remind you here that frequently, when the ruler of a sign is given as the sun or moon, I shall speak of one of the hidden planets, Uranus or Vulcan. Either Uranus and Vulcan are the hidden planets, or it's the hidden planets Uranus and Vulcan. These are interchangeable in their use, and it is difficult to tell to which the esoteric planet refers, unless you have been told. That's a bit of a reversal of the perspective we would normally consider difficult to tell which esoteric planet we're talking about, rather than what the esoteric planet refers to, namely the sun or the moon. Hence my above reference to Uranus. Uranus, in a way, let's just sum it up by saying, being veiled by the sun in relation to the first manifested creative hierarchy. And that does not necessarily mean that Vulcan is not veiled by the sun as well. Both have relation to the logoic plane. Okay, we have reached a point when we say end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 45, and we have gone to what page? 99. So we have gone from page 97 almost to the end of 99, and page 100 is coming. So from the beginning part of page 97 up to 99. And now, per usual, we will sound the great invocation together. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men, let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, friends, we have completed number 45. We are working in Aries and learning of some of the many connections of this interesting sign of both death and birth. Birth into the higher worlds. So we'll see you for astrology adventure number 46.